This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and risk tolerances. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Invest Talk April 11th edition. One of the arch enemies of successful in investing is ignorance. If you're ignorant, it's a problem. It usually comes in the form of false confidence, though. People don't realize they're ignorant. That's the feeling that you believe you got it figured out. Boy, believe me, that's a dangerous state of mind. You don't have it figured out. Very few people have it figured out. It's very difficult. Jerry Klein, our founding partner here, used to say, you don't know what you don't know. So you may know just this much, but don't realize there's a whole gamut of information that you don't even know exists. So you don't know what you don't know. So moving ahead with the belief that we have a lot to learn, this is Invest Talk. Our goal is to elevate the average investor to be above average. That means eliminating mistakes, usually false confidence. That is the scourge of every investor. This is a one-hour forum. We try to educate you, try to become more informed. And I don't pretend to teach you everything. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to make you more informed, to make you more aware of what investment is all about, investing is all about. Anyways, preparing your mortgage. I'm sorry, prepaying your mortgage, while it can save you money on total interest, may not make sense for you in the long run. Paying off a mortgage. You know, I'm a big believer in paying off the mortgage before you retire. But maybe it doesn't make a lot of sense to some people, and that's what we're going to talk about. The argument against paying off your mortgage early. That's going to be one of our talking points. When you are investing, you must be attuned to the global economic gyrations. Markets fluctuate as future economic growth forecasts wax and wane. Therefore, you must study and attempt to understand future economic activity. This is very difficult because it's future. You're reading tea leaves. Now, you can watch things like the leading economic indicators, GDP reports, but with the advent of ETFs, exchange-traded funds, that follow all types of asset classes, it's getting easier to read the tea leaves of the market. But of course, the easier it is, the more people know about it, the harder it is to predict. Now there's an ETF that tracks the performance of the 30-year treasury market. So when this 30-year treasury, this ETF moves up, it means investors are taking risks off by moving to safer assets. In other words, people are taking money out of stocks and buying 30-year treasuries because they're so safe. So when the 30-year treasury ETF goes up, you know that people are leaving the stock market, taking risks off the table. That's just one. There's one that's pretty widely used for decades as an indicator, and that's indicator of global economic activity, and that's copper. There's a copper ETF. It'll give you some idea of economic growth being priced into the market. A copper ETF. There's more. I mean, it doesn't stop there. I mean, it goes on and on. Small companies historically have outperformed large companies. So when they do very well, you know that the economy is growing pretty good. When the small companies start to fail, you got to worry about that. So you watch the ETFs that track small companies, one of the indexes that track small companies. The market is complex, everybody. And then you add in the economy and the market, it's complex. Now, they have cycles, both those, and those cycles do not coincide, but they are related. Usually the economic cycle is behind the stock market cycle. So the stock market is a leading indicator of the economy. So as you try to read the economy, the stock market might have already reacted. It gets complex. Anyways, you need to understand that it is very complex, and you have to understand how it works to some degree if you're going to invest your own money. Now let's get to work answering your questions. Any money questions on our Vest Talk here, 888-99-CHART. Smoke from Fremont call. Hi, Smoke. Smoley?
Hi, Steve. It's Floyd.
Smoley, okay. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Hi. Hey, thanks for the advice in advance. Hey, look, I have a question about a target dated bond fund. And I'm trying to avoid bond funds in general in a rising rate environment, like you say. You know,
right.
Bond funds are not very good. So I'm trying Guggenheim. It has the call symbols, B as in Bob, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, M as in Mike. And it has a target date of 2022. And I want to know what you think about this as a substitute for a regular bond fund.
I would say no. You can't. Let me rephrase that. Yes, it can be a substitute for a bond fund. But if you're asking me if it's a bond fund that you should buy now, I would say probably no. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Why? Because it has fallen an index of corporate bonds of 2022. Okay, so
right.
That is, you know, here it is 2017, it's 5 years. Now, that's not a long-term bond. That's kind of a intermediate to short-term bond, okay? So rising interest rates will affect it less than
right.
A long-term bond, but it still will be affected. So you,
okay.
What you really want to do, and I'm not recommending this for anybody, is maybe a treasury inflated protection bond fund or
right.
Short-term bond fund mm-hmm. or floating rate bond fund. Those would be better protections against interest rate rises and
okay.
Reduce your risk of the stock market.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Molly. Appreciate it. Appreciate the call. Floyd? I don't know Floyd. The argument against paying off your mortgage. That's one of our main talking points today, everybody. Also, major support for the S&P. We're talking about charting. Remember, there's two ways to look at the market, two ways to look at investing. One is doing fundamentals of the companies you're investing in, and another is watching the chart of the stock price movement of the company you're interested in. You can do the same thing for the entire index. So that's going to be major support for the S&P on the charts and the Dow. And how much of federal revenue comes from IRS? How much of it? I got some really fun statistics and information about our taxes and what we do with them. So how much do you think of the federal government, percentage-wise, the income coming into the federal government, how much comes from the IRS? The IRS gets that money. How much? 100%? 50%? 20%? I got the numbers. And five things that prove rich people are cheap, or at least some rich people. And I hate to say this, but if you count me as rich, and I'm not sure I should be counted rich, I kind of fit a few of these because I am kind of cheap, I guess. Anyways, those are the things we're going to talk about. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. The market fell today. The Dow is down 7, the NASDAQ down 14, the S&P down 3. Was the market up today? Well, it was mostly down most of the day. So it really did not have a good day today. Did you notice the dollar? Did you notice gold? Mm-hmm. Was the dollar down or up? Do you know? See, if you're a market watcher, you would know these things. These are things you watch all the time. And the dollar was down today. So if you're looking at a chart of the dollar, it's lower lows and lower highs since the beginning of the year. The dollar is weakening. What does that tell you? Is it telling you anything? Now, it tells me that there's a lot of worry in the market and a lot of worry out there about the economy. Not that much confidence. Even though we're doing pretty well, there's still a lot of worry. Because the dollar would get stronger if everything was hunky-dory. The dollar would get stronger. So, what do you want to talk about? I'm Financializer Steve Peasley. What can we talk about today that would really be important to you? Now, talk about stocks and bonds and other things, but what's important to you? As long as it's financial, we'll talk about it. The line is open, 888-99-CHART is our live listener line. It's open every weekday live 4 to 5 Pacific Time, but you can always call.
Hi, this is Dick calling from Sacramento. I've got you on podcast. I was just wondering about these moving averages, you know, 5, 50 days, 100, 200 days. How do you know which average to use? Everyone seems to be talking about 50-day, 100, 200-day moving average. How would you apply that to, let's say, a long-term growth stock of J&J? I was just wondering about, not sure how to use these moving averages, but everyone talks about it. Maybe you can give us some fundamentals and basics on what we should be using. Thank you for your help.
Okay. You should use a one-year daily chart of the stock market, of the stock target that you're, whatever stock you're looking at or the index you're looking at. A one-year chart, daily movement. And then you should apply 20, 50, 100, and 200-day moving averages to it. Four moving averages, if you can do four. 20 is pretty low, and 200 is pretty long, okay? And these moving averages, the only reason that these moving averages have any validity is because everybody looks at them. You kind of hit on it when you said everybody seems to be talking about it. Well, that's because everybody looks at them. But what happens is they tend to be true because people react to them, investors react to them because those are the ones they look at. Now, the problem you have is do you use a simple moving average, an exponential moving average? Do you use a moving average of the close of the price of the day for every day of those last year? Or do you use the price average of open, high, low, close of the day of the stock that you see? It can get more and more complex. Keep it simple. My philosophy, just keep it simple. Use your, and if you can only do a couple averages, make sure you have the 50 and 200 day moving average. But 20, 50, 100, and 200 day moving average is what most of the investors look at. And those averages show you support and resistance. That shows you what, all it is averaging out the volatility of the stock price movement. That's all it's doing. Okay, but people use it as trigger points. Like if it breaks below the 200-day moving average, that means the stock is now in a long-term downtrend. Do you want to stay in a stock that's in a long-term downtrend? Breaks below or above the 20-day moving average, that might mean the start of a new trend, one direction or the other. That's how they kind of are being used. And also support and resistance and on and on and on and on. You could talk about them forever. You can have a course on the moving averages, teaching for weeks how it works. So, but if you just keep it simple, 20, 50, 100, 200-day moving averages are the four basic moving averages everybody uses. The 20-day is a trigger to buy and sell often. Okay, the 200-day is a trigger if you're a long-term investor and you want to avoid disaster, you can use a 200-day moving average. But you know, it also depends on how the stock itself moves. Is it a fast mover, a slow mover? Does it, you know, like Johnson & Johnson, for instance, the company you called about, is a pretty slow mover, up and down. So, you know, it depends on, you know, the stock also, and what moving averages become more important. This is InvestTalk. I'm Steve Peasley, 888-99-CHARTS. How to reach me right now. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific Time. Love to hear from you. 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. Talking about anything financial. Why prepaying your mortgage is a bad idea for most people. Now, I'm not saying I agree with this. So don't take away from here, well, he says don't pay the mortgage. Now, I think you should have your mortgage paid off by the time you retire. And it has not that much to do with financial reality. It has more to do with being comfortable in your retirement, not having an active income when you're retired, and not having to worry about it, and being you know, having a smooth retirement. But some of the things you should have before you start paying off the mortgage, you should have enough emergency savings. Do you have enough money set aside for emergencies? Remember, talked earlier last week about how few people have very little money. They can't even afford a $500 to $1,000 emergency. Another thing, is your retirement on track? Are you maxing out your 401k and your IRA? are you maxing out it enough to get the matches from your employer if they're matching it? You should do that first. And one of the things they say, do you see your home as an investment? Now, in many parts of the country, it's not a very good investment because home prices are very stable. Not like other parts of the country, like where you hear me on the radio right now, and that's in the Bay Area. The home prices are very volatile and always increasing over time. Same thing in Southern California. But little large stretches of the Midwest, houses don't go up in value. They still are a store of value. In other words, you can, you know, there's always worth money, and therefore, but it's not growing. So, you know, where are you and how is your property doing? You know, and also remember, when you pay off your mortgage, you lose a write-off when you pay off all the interest. If you're going to move shortly or within the next few years, that's not a good idea to pay off the mortgage then, because you're going to move somewhere else. You know, there's reasons, but in general, my philosophy is you do not want to have a mortgage in retirement because you do not have an active income in retirement. It's all passive, most of it, or Social Security, and it can be fixed. It's not growing. You're not going to get raises. You know, you know, not like you used to when you were a working person. Okay. 888-99-CHARTERS, our number, 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Aaron in New York. How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm great, Steve. How are you?
I'm great, and I appreciate your call. I do.
Thank you. I appreciate your program. I'm calling with a question about Qualcomm.
Yes.
QCOM. I'm thinking about opening up a position, and I want to hear your thoughts.
I know Qualcomm quite well. We used to be an owner of it. We haven't owned it for a number of months, but we had it for quite some time. Designs CDMA, and well, I don't know if everybody knows the systems, but they design different systems in wireless handsets, and almost every cell phone out there, they get a little piece because they're using their technology. And Qualcomm also makes chipsets. Qualcomm didn't even exist in the early 1990s. That's when it was first came out. And it really was the company that spread cell phones and made them work much more efficiently. So it's a really good, solid technology company, and still is. It's growing its sales 4, 5, 6, 7, 8% per quarter, so it's still doing well. The insiders were buying this stock at around $50, $51, $52, quite a bit. Okay, and that was some time ago. Almost a year ago. They haven't been buyers, and just recently another insider bought some more shares. It's always important to see the buyers, Aaron. If insiders are buying, and if they're doing it in a lot, you know, a strong way, then that makes you feel more confident, because they feel confident. Mutual funds are net buyers as well over the last year, so they like it too. So, yeah, I think if it got down to the low 50s, I'd be a buyer. I would want it. It's right now it's $55, $56, $55.35 today. And so it's kind of right in the middle of the buy point. So, yeah, you could buy it here, and there would be nothing wrong with it. But I kind of want to wait for it to be a little bit lower for myself. Then I'd probably get back in it. Okay?
Great. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. So low 50s is where I'm in. It's right at the mid-50s, but the low 50s is where I think it would be a better buy point. And I think you'll get it. You just got to be patient. I think you'll get it. Save the day for our next InvestTalk Wealth webinar. This one is perfect for the hands-on investor who wants to increase your skills, your analytical skills, fundamental and technical analysis, back to the basics. Justin and Jason are going to be hosting it, not myself, but Justin and Jason. The date is April 26th at 6:30 p.m. Fundamental and technical analysis, back to basics. What metrics matter most? How to screen for attractive stocks? How to identify chart patterns in today's market? It's an hour long. It's free. You have to sign up. You register now by going to investtalk.com, so why not sign up? Remember, it's free. The date is April 26th at 6:30 Pacific time, p.m. We're at the halfway mark of this Tuesday Invest Talk. Right now, let's hear your money questions. 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and good reason number four for getting together with Steve for a portfolio checkup. One of the considerations when investing is dividends. Dividends, they can be the hidden value in a stock. The question is, how can you maximize your return in an ever-changing economic climate? Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio and find those dividends. And there's never a cost for InvestTalk listeners and no obligation of any kind. To schedule your one-to-one meeting on Skype or telephone, just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now let's continue with the podcast. Invest Talk continues now, and next time, do you know what dead money costs are? Have you read your prospectus? What you don't know can cost you. Seven things you need to know about mutual funds. And Steve will talk about that next time on Invest Talk. You can set the topic of your own right now. Call us at 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Robert in Pleasanton. How you doing, Robert?
Hey, I'm doing well, Steve. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
I was taking a look at Seagate. I don't currently own it, STX, and the dividend yield caught my eye.
Okay.
I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about the stock.
Do you know who their main competitor is, Robert?
No, I don't.
I want to talk about their main competitor, but I can't because I'm not supposed to bring up stocks that I own. Because against the SEC rule, because I own their main competitor. I do.
Okay.
Seagate is a good company, okay? Seagate Technology, it manufactures hard disk drives for the enterprise, desktop, mobile, computing, and consumer electronics market. They're a $14 billion company, and their main competitor is $24 billion. Now, that doesn't mean a lot other than one's bigger than the other, but they're both are very big. And I can see where Seagate's dividend attracted you, 5.1%. That is pretty darn attractive. But all the other numbers of Seagate are not nearly as impressive as Western Digital. Oh, gee, did I just mention the company? I did, didn't I? Gee whiz.
Western Digital, I believe.
That's it. Thanks for bringing it up, Robert. We own Western Digital. The reason why I like Western Digital is because Seagate sales have been shrinking for 2 years in a row, and they're still shrinking. Yes, they're shrinking less, only 3 or 4%. But Western Digital's sales have been growing the most recent quarter 45%. Quarter before that, 40. The quarter before that, 10. Now, some of that is because they bought some competitors out. But the P/E ratio for both these companies are the same. The big difference is Seagate has a much better dividend than Western Digital. 2.3% for Western Digital, 5%. But Western Digital's growth is much better. We own Western Digital and have for some time. I like them both. Okay, Robert? They're both still not expensive. But they are both near the top of their own P.E. ratio range. They range from 3 to 16 P.E. ratio for Seagate, and it's at 15. And 3 to 15 for Western Digital, and it's at 16. So, you know, they're both good companies. And they're both at 52-week highs. So it's a tough call. If you're looking for the dividend, go with Seagate. Okay?
Okay.
Robert, appreciate the call. I like them both, though. I like the sphere that they're in. I do. Let's go to Nick and Hayward. How you doing, Nick?
Fine, sir. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you for the call.
Great show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. What do you think about GME?
GameStop.
Good dividend, and the price seems to be attractive. What do you think?
Okay. Have you heard me talk about creative destruction before on the air? The book called Creative Destruction, and how have you ever heard me talk about that, Nick?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay, let's talk about GameStop and what they do. They operate 7,717 GameStop EB Games, and Micromania stores worldwide. And they're going to open 140 more stores in this year and next, last year and this year. This is my problem with them. They're a good, solid company. Why are their sales going down, though? They're already opening more stores. Shouldn't sales be going up? And the reason I worry about this one, Nick, is called creative destruction. That is a method in which we invent new ways to do stuff in our economy, and the old ways get destroyed. For instance, let me give you a for instance. What's the new way they make cars? Well, they make electric ones now. Maybe the old gasoline cars may go away. What else is getting destroyed? Why would GameStop be destroyed? Because games are being downloaded electronically these days, right? Not necessarily go buy a CD, a game, and then you enter it. You use it and put it in your computer. So their business model is being attacked, GameStop's business model. Therefore, even though they're a good, solid company right now, they're paying a high dividend, they have a very low PE, well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Maybe that business model is not going to work so good in the future. That's why I would not buy GameStop.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for your thoughts.
Appreciate the call. Nothing wrong with the company right now, but you got to look ahead. PE ratio is really low. And for a company making good money, too. So why don't I like it? I don't like it because of creative destruction. If you ever read that book, you should go out and read it, everybody. Good book. It's an old book, too. You know, it talks about different parts, different things over history. For instance, you probably don't remember. I don't remember because even beyond my time, but buggy whips. There was some company that made buggy whips, and they were very popular when it was horse and carriage days. You needed a buggy whip to make the horse go. Got destroyed. Matter of fact, the whole horse and carriage industry got destroyed when cars were invented, weren't they? What else is going to be destroyed? How about robotics right now, taking over a lot of different industries? How about artificial intelligence in the future? Ooh-wee. Now, does that mean the whole economy is going to be destroyed? No. Every time, there's just different things become more important. Different industries, different ways of doing things. Someone's got to repair those robots. Someone's got to program them. Someone's got to control what they do. Someone's got to feed them electricity or gasoline or whatever. There's jobs, just different kinds. And you got to be careful. Your job is not one that's getting destroyed. 888-99-CHART. Major support of the S&P 500. Charting. We're talking about charting. Remember we talked earlier about the 20, 50, 100, 200-day moving charts? Because there was a question earlier in the show about it. Well, the S&P and the Dow are right at the 50-day moving average. 50-day moving average, 2,370. Where is the 50-day moving average? And that is strong support or resistant levels. So, and the S&P is very close to those, and the Dow are very close to those numbers. So it's a situation where if you're charting, you pull up a chart. By the way, did you know you can find free charts, very good free charts, at stockcharts.com? If you don't have to pay for them, even though I do, but you don't have to. Stockcharts.com has very good charting program in which you can build a chart any way you want to. Remember I said a one-year daily price chart? Well, start there. And you can put in three moving averages on it, too. So you can do that. But if you look at it, you look at the 50-day moving average, and you say, this is very close to the 50-day moving average. And ever since, the beginning of the year, that 50-day moving average has been pretty strong support. It's still above it, but just barely. So, if it breaks below it, where would it go? Probably to the 200-day moving average, which is about 30 points down from the 50-day moving average. If you look at the 200-day moving average, you'll see going back over a year, it bounced off it twice in the last year, the 200-day moving average. That's what I mean by support. And why does that work? Why does it bounce off the 50 or the 20 or the 200? Why? Well, that's because of people like me looking at it and we react to it. All those people looking at charts. They look at the same charts and react to it. That's the only reason why it works. No other. Remember, charting is not a science. It's more of an art. And they just tend to be true. Not always true, just tend to be true. Okay? Let's go to Bobby in Atlanta. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Steve. Good. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Chicago Bridge and I am C. Yes. As a Charlie, B as a Bravo, I as an India.
Very familiar with it. What you want to buy it? What do you want to know?
Is it a good time to buy?
Yes. CBI, everybody, Chicago Bridge and Iron Company. We happen to own this one. We bought it not that long ago. We kind of like it. We bought it near after Trump won, which, remember, he won in November. That first day, it really shot up, okay? Then it came back down. Why would it do that? Well, because he talked about infrastructure spending, right? In a big way. What does Chicago Bridge and Iron do? Provides construction and related services to hydrocarbon, oil and gas, chemical, power, water, and metals industry. A lot of fundamental basic materials and basic construction business. That's what they are. So if the government's going to spend big bucks or be very kind to building infrastructure, this company is going to benefit greatly. Now, it has a PE of 7 right now, pretty low. Always makes money. It's going to make $4.56 next year. It's a $30 stock. Very inexpensive. Okay. Sales are still slowing down, though. So you would say, wow, man, sales are slowing down. What's the big deal? But remember, Bobby, you're looking at it. I'm looking at it. We're looking at the future. What is the future for this company? Well, if they pass that spending bill, the future will look a lot brighter and sales will jump, won't they?
Yep.
And by that time, it'll be too late to get in, won't it? Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you get in it now. Yep. That's what I think you do.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. All right. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Bobby. Appreciate it. CBI. How much of the federal revenue comes from the IRS, the IRS efforts? How about 92%? 92% of the federal government's income comes from our tax dollars. I got other stats on that too. Come to terms with investing. Here's an investing term you should understand. What is volatility? Is volatility good or bad? It's neither. Volatility is neither good nor bad. It refers to the amount of uncertainty or risk about the size and changes in a security's value, up and down, just the changes, not down, not up, both. A higher volatility means that a security's value can potentially be spread out over a larger range of values. This means that the price of the security can change dramatically over a short-term period. The more volatile that stock, the more chances it's going to rise fast or fall fast. And lower volatility means that its value does not fluctuate as much. And a measure of relative volatility of a particular stock to the market is called a beta, or called beta, B-E-T-A. A beta approximates the overall volatility of a stock or security against the S&P 500. What's the beta of the S&P 500 versus the beta of a stock compared to it? So if a stock has a beta of 1, that means it's just as volatile as the market. If it has a volatility of 1.1, that means it has it's 10% more volatile, up or down, than the market. A volatility of 0.9 means it's 10% less volatile than the market. If you'd like to study this a little closer, you can go to our friends at investopedia.com and look it up. Volatility.
If you live near Ramona in Northern California, Steve will be there April 25th for individual retirement reviews. And if you're not near our California offices, Steve can meet with you via Skype or telephone. It's easy to set up. If you'd like to do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
Hi, Steve. My name's Andrea, and I was just calling to know what you thought about Sprouts. SFM, Sprouts Market. Would love to know your take on it. Thank you so much, and have a great week.
Okay. I like Sprouts. Have you ever been to one of the Sprouts markets? I think they're kind of fun. I like them. I like them. They operate 224 supermarkets in 13 states offering natural and organic food items with 36 new stores planned for 2016. That was last year. I'm not big on organic food. I'm not big on it. I'm not big on it. But I do like their fresh food items. I think it's really good. I just like this concept. And they're making money. Their sales are growing. Their earnings are going to be up 6% this year and another 15% next year to $1.01 a share. And the stock is $23.21. So it's a 23 PE based on next year's earnings, right? Well, that's pretty good. That's for them. The low 5-year PE is 21 to 110. So that's pretty good. They have a good return on equity of 17%. Sales are growing a little bit slower every quarter because they're getting a little bit bigger. They're a $3.1 billion company now. They had a really good, got down to $18 a share in March. Today they're 23. So they had a really good numbers come out and really jumped the stock in 3 or 4 days. So now it's had made a big move. I mean, what is that, 30% in a month? I think you want to wait for a pullback, maybe to see if it'll come back down, give some of those gains back. Generally speaking, in a big move in a very short period of time, that half of that's given back. In other words, it comes back down. Not always, generally. So I probably wait for that. I like what they do. Go to a store, go to a Sprouts store, and just. You'll look in the store and it seems to be pretty busy. You're listening to Invest Talk. Glad you're here today. Don't save the question. We can still fit your question in if you want. 888-99-CHARGE. Let's talk to Jay in San Jose. How you doing, Jay?
Hey, I'm doing good, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
I want to know, what are the, instead of managing fund ourselves, just invest money in S&P 500 index fund?
Okay.
What are the, problems or, disadvantages can be? And I'm looking to invest for a long term, not, the short term, 5 years. I'm, 10 years down the line.
Okay. Then there really is no problem doing it that length. And Jay, if you can stick with it, invest in it long term. The S&P 500 is a perfectly valid way to make money. It goes up over time. It always has, always will. And over 10 years, I guarantee you'll make money. There'll be years where you don't, but if you stick with it, in the years that you don't make money, those are the years you want to put more money in the market, not less. A recession, you want to put more money in it when it's in a recession. Not less. And you'll make a lot more money. Think about what happened in 2008. The market went down about 45, 50%. The S&P did. The next year, it made all that up. Now, if you would have got out because you got scared, you would have never made any of the money back. This is the problem This is the problem that people have. They panic out. When you should be, when you're losing money in your S&P 500 index, buying the index, and you're losing money in it, buy more. Not sell. And Jay, that's hard to do because, your money's going down and you're thinking, oh my goodness. But if I could convince you to think in these terms, when it goes down, the S&P 500 goes down, you buy more of the index. You're actually buying more shares at a lower cost. You're buying it on sale. Think of that. Don't think of my value is going down. Think you're putting on more shares and more shares and more shares when it's on sale. And then you might be able to survive that downturn. Okay?
Okay. Thanks. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. It's hard to convince you when you watch your money go down. You go, oh, my God. because it doesn't go down a straight line. It goes down a little bit, then a little more, then more, then more, more and more and more. No one tells you when the bottom is coming. You don't know. I don't know. No one knows where the bottom is. Got some pretty good guesses, but you never know for sure. Anyway, since the IRS brings in 92% of the income to the government, right? Here's some more. There's 153 million returns filed this year. 153, representing about $1.65 trillion from individual tax returns. Not talking about corporate tax. Tax returns take an average of 15 hours to prepare. 15 hours. No wonder everybody hates doing it. I hate doing it myself. 90% of the refunds issued by the federal government are done within 21 days. 21 days or less. 80% file their tax returns electronically now. 70% of the people who file returns get money back. That's a mistake, by the way. You don't want a government to hold on to your money for a long length of time. Try to be more accurate as to how many dependents and deductions you are, and not give more than the government than you have to. And everybody worries about getting audited, right? Of those 153 million returns, the IRS audits 0.6% of them. That doesn't mean you go cheat, because if you raise little red flags, your chances of audit go up dramatically. But they don't audit very many. They don't. And since 2010, ID theft, and part of it is IRS fraud, right? People filing your return using your information, has increased 700% since 2010. ID theft. Ow. Interesting stats, I thought they were interesting. 888-99 chart. I got five things that prove rich people are cheap. Five things that rich. Unfortunately, I might fit in these categories. First, I only got a minute left. I got to take more minutes than that. Okay, well, I'm gonna have to talk about this one tomorrow then. Five things that people prove rich people are cheap. Okay, I think you'll find it interesting. I did. Looks like we're done with the day, everybody. When the hour's up. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. You can reach me directly with a question or comment. Sorry, I'm not able to respond to a list of stock questions. They're very difficult because of the time consuming. Ask one, and I'll try to. I'm pretty good about getting back to you. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the contact Steve button, send me it. I will get back to you, I promise. In behalf of Justin Klein and everybody else at KPP Financial, thanks for being with us today. And let's plan on getting together tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.